off with our channel structures now. And so last piece of the puzzle is just what actually goes into the time slot, and the answer is that it sort of depends on what the time slot's being used for. But in general, obviously you have a number of bits, and so how many bits you can send is going to depend on the duration of the time slot and the bit rate. And in this case, we have a bit duration of 3.69 microseconds, which is a bit rate of 270 roughly kilobits per second. And you can have 148 bits in most of the time slots. You have less bits for your request allocation channels. Okay, so the group of bits sent during a time slot is referred to as a burst. And consists, again, and then the time slot length allows for bits plus guard times.
This slide seems to have gotten out of place, but there are now, again, a number of different types of bursts,
depending on, again, what you're doing with the time slot. So your normal bit burst is used for carrying data in most signaling. S-bursts are used for frequency correction and synchronization. Access bursts are used for your resource allocation, and idle bursts are used if
if you're not actually using the frame. Okay. Okay, so the full time hierarchy works either up or down from your bursts up to
multi-frames and super frames,
and will completely define what happens at any given point within the cycle. Okay. So our 8 time slots constitute a frame, and then we saw we defined multi-frames by both traffic and control channels for the purpose of multiplexing, for the purpose of using those frames for different purposes within the multi-frame. Different size multi-frames were used for traffic and control, and so essentially you have two cycles with different periods going on. So to normalize that, you create what's called a super frame, and So a super frame is 26 times 51 frames, and so that will give you the entire cycle for both control and data channels. And so this is 1,300 roughly frames, and that's your entire signaling cycle. There is one level beyond that. You have 2,048 superframes. Create a hyperframe, and that lasts over 3 hours. And at this point, the system clock returns to an initial state, and this is used for just for purposes of encryption. So again, working our way down, we have our hyperframe, we have the superframe, which is divided into 26 multi-frames of control and 51 multi-frames of data. We know, depending on positioning, what each time slot is being used for, and so again, from your multi-frame, from your super frame, you go down to your multi-frame, and each frame is used for a different purpose then, and the purpose then governs what goes into the time slot, what sort of a burst goes into your time slot. Okay. Okay, so this is just sort of a summary of what we've discussed so far. We have our logical channels, which are divided up into control and traffic channels and subdivided, and then that again governs what sort of burst goes in. And this looks like this is essentially a reiteration of what we've said. We have our hyperframes, then we have our superframes, which are a combination of either control or data multi-frames, and so on. Okay. So, again, the bottom line for that is if you, within the superframe, you know what's going on at every point within what logical channel is assigned to each physical channel at each point. Okay, so just to look at, again, our call setup. Again, the mobile station synchronizes with the base station by listening to the ECH channels, so time synchronization, frequency synchronization, beaconing. And when, if it wishes to make a call, it has to make the request on your resource allocation uplink. The base station then allocates control channels to the user, which will be used to set up the link, and the mobile station then will tune in to the control stations used, the control channels used to manage that link. So again,
it will be the allocation of the channel is not just a time slot, but also you need
power information.
It's power and timing information as well. Okay. The slow dedicated control channel
allows for authentication to take place. And also then MSC is creates the pathway back to the call E. Once the connection is created, the slow SDCCH tells the mobile station what data channel it can transmit over, okay, and then data and control is transmitted over that station from then on.
Okay, so like I say, it's complicated, and the main thing to do is try and appreciate sort of what the basic approach is. Again, if you were actually working with this, you'd have to be studying textbooks about exactly how channels do various functions. Okay.
So that gives us the channel structure indicates how the resources are managed in order to, again,
negotiate connectivity with the network,
connect with the network, etc. Sends data, then the allocated channels to send data. So the final aspect that we'll look at here is the transmission system.
And again, the question here is exactly how are we transmitting our data? What exactly are we sending? And so there's more to it than forming up bits.
From the user end, we're sending a voice signal that has to be encoded. possibly the signal compressed, it has to be digitized, compressed, and some sort of redundancy added, the bits formed up, and then
the signal transmitted. So we'll just say a few words about those steps as that go on. Okay.
So again, the mobile equipment is communicating via radio with the GSM network, so two-way communication there. At the mobile side, again, we have to do voice processing, so we when we're transcending, we have to digitize our signal, we have to encode it, we have to do channel encoding, then we form the signal to be future, maybe we further what beyond coding would you further sort of quality techniques of interleaving. So and then eventually we get to the point where we have the bits that we wish to send, we format them as bursts, and as those get transmitted. And of course, at the other side, you have to just rewind that process. And on the base station side, you do pretty much the same things. Obviously, there's no actual voice signal at the base station, no analog voice signal, so you don't need to do the voice encoding, but everything else is pretty much the same.
So,
if you recall, our gold standard for voice digitization was the 64 kilobits per second, and you can't transmit that high bit rate on the 200 kilohertz channels that we have in GSM. So we use a lower bitrate encoding, and again, this is one of these sort of mathematical representations and parameterizations of our voice signal. So the parameters give us a constant. We assume that the parameters are constant over our voice chunk that we're going to send. And so each voice chunk, 20 millisecond chunk, is represented by a fixed number of bits. A few additional factors are added. So we have discontinuous transmission mode, so we only transmit if there's actually a signal to transmit. And we also add in a bit of noise just to, again, smooth the quality of the voice signal. Okay. And so our encoding technique gets us down to 13 kilobits per second.
Okay, so we have our
chunk, our 20 millisecond chunk takes up 260 bits of input. Okay, and we then encode this input. Okay, and again, these are all the bits represent parameters. And so we classify them as very important, and not very important. And then we use stronger encoding depending on the importance of our bits. So our 50 very important bits, we consider we can't recover the signal without them. So they gets a 3-bit block encoding. So if the block encoder indicates that there's a problem with these 50 bits, then we just toss the whole chunk. Our very important bits, our important bits, are also convolution coded. And then we have our 78 not so important bits, so we just send them along and hope for the best. Okay.
All in all, that gets us up to 456 bits, or 22.8 bits per kilobits per second. So the block encoding is not used for error correction. It's just used for error detection. And if errors are detected, then you drop the block and interpolate your speech sample. So speech, again, you can, there's, you know, some loss is acceptable. The convolution coding, as we saw, does allow for error correction, so we try and, again, present the best interpretation of the signal as possible. Okay. So, we can perform additional processing on the signal. In particular, we can interleave our data. And so if we interleave our data, then the blocks, the speech blocks, are not blocks transmitted are not sending, the stream of data sent is not consecutive, and therefore, if you lose portions of that stream, then you're not losing consecutive bits of data, and therefore it's better, it's more possible to recover from loss. So we break our 456 bits into 8 57-bit subblocks, and again, blocks are not carrying consecutive bits, so the transmission is not of consecutive bits, and therefore, again, you're less likely to lose consecutive bits, and if you're not losing consecutive bits, you're more likely to be able to, if it's a single bit error, you're more likely to be able to recover from it. Okay. So, additionally, we spread the blocks over consecutive frames, and so now time slots are carrying bits from two consecutive samples. Okay. And again, this means that hopefully if you lose a block, then you're only losing sort of a small portion from any given sample. Okay. So you have these multiple layers of protection that try to ensure that any sort of single loss does not have a large impact on a given segment of data. And again, hopefully you can recover from the small component of loss. Okay. In terms of transmission, GSM uses GMSK, so Gaussian
minimum shift keying, and you know, we mentioned that earlier on. And again, this is a compromise between spectral efficiency and complexity at the transmitter.
Okay, it's also possible to use
frequency hopping. And so if you have, if the quality of the channel is severe enough, then frequency hopping is used. It's slow frequency hopping. It's done on a frame-by-frame basis. And you can have up to 64 frequencies in a hopping sequence. And the receiver will also attempt to compensate for multi-path effects. Okay. And it does that using training sequences which are sent in the middle of every burst. Okay, so again, that's just a few of the details for how we transmit between sender and receiver. And again, it shows sort of how some of the components we discussed about in abstract terms are then sort of applied in an actual system. Okay, so finally we'll just say a few words about, again, not just the radio link, but the links through the system. Okay. And so what we've seen is that we have a lot of management functions going on, so it's not just allocating the radio resource, but we're doing authentication, we're doing routing through the system, we're setting up our links, and possibly we're moving from cell to cell, maybe from MSC to MSC. Okay. So all of that has to be managed. All of it's managed through signaling. Okay. And so there's what's called a GSM layer 3 signaling protocol stack. And this just divides the types of management that needs to be done into a number of layers. So this is not layers like in packet networks. It's not the OSI stack. It's a telephone network. But again, they divided up their management functions into layers. Okay, so radio resource management is the lowest layer, and again, it's managing the resources available and their allocation. Mobility management is exactly what it says. If the users are moving, then it tracks the users and handles their movement through the system. And communication management, setting up these end-to-end links with through the network.
Okay, so anything that you need to establish and maintain a connection between the mobile station and the MSC. Okay, so there's, again, a number of
protocols associated with and signaling associated with each of the layers, and exactly what happens depends on where you are. Again, we're thinking of moving between our mobile station and our MSC in order to maintain connectivity with the network. And so the physical signal we have at any given point changes depending on who you're communicating with. The link sharing obviously changes depending on how the communication is being arranged. Radio resource management, again, depends on exactly who's doing what. Although, again, the MSC does have an input into how the resources are allocated overall. And then, again, as we go up, mobility management is handled between the mobile station and the MSC, and connection management, again, is from the mobile station to the MSC. Exactly what goes on at any given point in the communication is, again, defined by our air interfaces. So not air interfaces, just interfaces. UM is the air interface. Okay. So the radio resource management is controlling the setup, maintenance, and termination of radio and fixed channels between the mobile unit and the MSC. Okay. And involves all of the components, the mobile station, the base station, and the MSC. And so it's concerned with the radio link, and so it manages channel assignment, change, and release, handover between cells, frequency hopping, power level control, all of the sort of low-level physical details of maintaining the radio connection. Handover would be sort of one of the most important control procedures. And a lot of signaling obviously involved in controlling the handover. Again, you're going to have to, everything that is set up within one cell, if you change cells, will have to be recreated in the new cell. Has to be done quickly, okay, otherwise the user will detect a gap in service. Okay. So, signal measurements are performed in both the uplink and downlink direction to facilitate the handover, and the mobile station is going to actively participate in the handover, so in the decision for handover. Okay. There are four main types of handover. So there's intracell, so from cell to cell. And so this thing, the decision to as to when to hand over is based on the quality of the channel, but also from the user perspective, but also from the network perspective, traffic load and trying to manage the load within the cells. And so again, you'll have to at least consider multiple cells within, to make that decision. You might move. Getting tired here. Okay, so that's actually within the same cell. Then you can move from cell to cell. Okay, and that can be decided by DSC, but again, there are all sorts of considerations in mind. You might change BSCs, okay, so you're essentially moving from one paging area to another, which is again, not only changing cells, but also changing your location as it's noted in the DLR, or actually HLR. Okay, then sometimes, or for the DLR, and then sometimes you might move from one MSC range to another MSC range. Okay, and so in this case, getting the coordination between the MSCs to do this. So the first two types of handover can be managed by the BSC, since it's within the remit of the BSC. The second two are managed by the MSC, since obviously involve multiple BSCs. Okay, and so
again, just graphically, you have your MS within a cell. Multiple cells will be coordinated by a single BSC, and so if you're moving within the BSC, the BSC manages that. Again, interacting with the mobile station to do so. If you move between BSCs, then that's going to have to be managed by the MSC, which can coordinate between the BSCs involved.
Okay. We're almost there. So, mobility management again manages the location of the users within networks and allows them to move in and out of the network, which involves authentication and provision of security. So mobility management occurs well when you first attach to the network, when you move from location to location within the network, and when you detach. So the main function of mobility management is to track the location of the user. And so, again, this is for purposes of paging, so we know within a paging area where the user is. As the user moves through the network, then that changes. Okay. So it requires updates to the home location register and visitor
location register. So the MS updates the visitor location register. The visitor location register then communicates its location to the home location register. And the home location register, again, sends the required details to the visitor location register. As you move from one VLR to the next, again, you have to change those details. Authentication and security, again, is authentication is performed when you join the network, and security in the form of encryption occurs as you use the network. Okay. The requirement for security obviously arises from the fact that, again, that it's a radio system. And various levels of encryption of data are used.
So does the HLR handle authentication?
The information can be rolled into the HLR, or else there's an authentication database function anyway. It's something, again, sometimes they're usually rolled in together. But yeah. Okay, so the encryption details are held, encryption keys are held in your SIM, and various algorithms are used for authentication and one for encryption and key generation. Okay. So the SIM and the Authentication Center, or HLR, are going to share an encryption key. And so that will be used to perform authentication. We check our equipment register and make sure that the equipment is not there. Phone has not been stolen. So when you're interacting with the network, you do it according to a temporary identity, so that there's no information about specific users available. Okay, so the final level of control is communication management, and this is used for call establishment and management, primarily. And circuit management within the system. Okay, so and you can, if you have sort of intelligence services, they will all be managed within here as well. Okay, so call management functions are handled by the MSC. So again, the MSC is what's responsible for providing an actual circuit. Okay, so again, it's a lot of detail and not enough detail at the same time. Some idea of what's going on. Now, I just added these for your information at the end. And this will give you examples of all of the signaling that goes on within these, within the various sort of operations. And so if you do bother looking, it'll look something like this. Again, you move from your user to the base station to the MSC. And up to the network. And what you see here is all of the signaling that goes on. And again, it tells you sort of what level that signaling is occurring at, justifies why we're doing the signaling, etc. So they are they're probably the best thing to look at to sort of make sense of sort of the high-level details that I gave you in this lecture. Okay, so that's it. Next week I'll sort of move on and we'll talk about sort of next generation or subsequent generations of mobile networks. Again, as an evolutionary step with the theme of trying to provide now packet data services as well as voice connectivity. So I'll see you guys next week.